Well, good morning, everyone. Start out with a couple logistical things. Penny, sorry if that seemed a little rude or harsh. I didn't intend for that to be. It was actually intended in humor. More to point out that nobody in my home does what I ask them to do, so less to do with you and more to do with them. So now I'll get home and Denise will tell me I owe them an apology, like she just told me I owed Penny an apology. Jerry Lindsay, today's December 21st. Is there any significance weather-wise related to that?
Yeah, 14 minutes ago, winter began.
14 minutes ago, winter began. So we are now officially in winter season. Is there anyone else that has any significance to December 21st at all that's in the room this morning? No? Jordan, you're shaking your head no. How can you possibly shake your head no? Isn't December 21st a day of significance for you? It's your birthday. Now, just so you know, now he's going to be in trouble because he's the one that told me. So, hey, happy birthday. Thank you for choosing to spend your part of your birthday with us here. For giving us the gift of you for your birthday. Thank you so much. We appreciate that. The other thing is, if you happened to be here for the Christmas program a couple weeks ago or watched online, just so you know, Christ is the first six letters of Christmas, not the first five letters of Christmas, which I said repeatedly. Five was in the script that I reviewed. It was a typo, and I didn't catch it. No one else caught it, and so I just went with five and didn't pay any attention. So Christ is the first six letters of Christmas, not the first five. Okay, so that's done, taken care of, and all that. Okay, so there was an Episcopal priest in Philadelphia back in the 1800s. What? What did I forget logistically? Oh, yeah, thank you. So the other significance is we want to congratulate the Harmon twins for an outstanding day yesterday in the Marion County wrestling meet. Is that correct? Did we have that? We have a first place finish and a fourth place finish among the two boys. So congratulations. So I will not tell you which finished first and which finished fourth, but I will tell you that they have to go in the other room down the hall later and wrestle it out to determine who gets which one. So thank you, because I did want to remember that. So, there was an Episcopal priest in Philadelphia in the 1800s by the name of Philip Brooks. Philip Brooks was 6'4" tall, but had a huge heart for people, especially a huge heart for children. He never married, never had any children of his own, but the children in his church and in the community around him became like his own family. When he unexpectedly died in 1893 at the age of 57, the church was very grieved and very shocked and mourned greatly. When one of the little girls in his church was told that Philip Brooks had gone to heaven, she said, "Oh, Mama, how happy the angels will be." So he wrote a lot of poetry for the children in his church, and one of the poems that he wrote for the children in his church was the song that we have, "O Little Town of Bethlehem." It's reported that he went and took a trip to Bethlehem in 1865, and he traveled on horseback from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. They think he traveled through the fields where the shepherds would have been tending watch the night of Jesus' birth. He attended a Christmas Eve service there. And fun fact, the Christmas Eve service that he attended reportedly lasted from 10 p.m. until 3 a.m. It was during this, that's 5 hours, just so you guys know. he wrote this song, or this poem, after this trip. And the service that he attended was believed to be on the site of the Nativity. And so he was so moved and compelled by this trip and this experience that he wrote this poem, O Little Town of Bethlehem. In 1906, a British lyricist and composer put the song to a British tune called Forest Green. And it's that tune that it's typically sung to in Great Britain. We do not sing it to that tune in America. We sing it to a tune that is originally titled St. Louis. It was written by a gentleman by the name of Louis Redner, who was a very wealthy financier in the Philadelphia area and also served as the organist in the church in Philadelphia where Brooks served as the Episcopal priest. So on a Friday night, Redner was asked by Brooks to put this song to music, or this poem to music, and to have it ready by Sunday. So Friday night, I need a song set, I need a poem set to music by Sunday, have it ready to go. He felt this, obviously, this enormous pressure to have this song ready to go, and the music wasn't coming. He just couldn't get settled on the music, and it was written very hastily, very urgently, under a lot of pressure. And he said that he woke up Saturday night after midnight and felt that the angels were whispering the melody to him. So he got out of bed. He wrote down the melody that we sing today and said he would add the harmony Sunday morning after he got to church. So that's a little story behind the legendary song, O Little Town of Bethlehem, and how it was written. Bethlehem is not just a little town in a legendary Christmas song. Bethlehem is a real place with historical significance and religious significance. Bethlehem is the place where Jesus was born. Bethlehem is the town where the Savior of the world was born. Bethlehem is the town where God took on human form in the form of a baby to live as a man, to die, to redeem sin, and to provide the path to right relationship with God for all who have trusted him. Bethlehem is not just a little town somewhere over in the Middle East. Bethlehem is a town of hugely major significance in the story of the first Christmas. In response to a decree issued by the Roman Caesar Augustus, a young man named Joseph had to travel from his home to be counted in the census. He made this trip with a young woman who was his engaged wife, but who was also scandalously pregnant at the time. When they arrive in Bethlehem and they find nowhere to stay, they stay in we call it a stable. It was much more likely an inset of a cave, like a grotto type thing that was carved out, and that so it's not like a wooden stable like we typically see in our nativity scenes and things like this. More likely a cave that they stayed in, and so they found nowhere to stay, so they stayed in this. And when they were there, the time came for the baby to be born. And when the baby was born, yeah, that's later. Hold that one. That one's good. And so when the time came for the baby to be born, the early follower Jesus gives a little bit more information. Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. Bethlehem is located in the West Bank, about 5 miles from Jerusalem. Now there should be a map. Is there a map in there? Yeah, there we go. So it's located about 5 miles, so you'll see it down here in red with the star down there. It's located about 5 miles from Jerusalem. At the time of Jesus' birth, the population would have been somewhere between 300 to 3,000 people. It was destroyed around 135 A.D. And rebuilt by Constantine the Great. Justin Martyr located the cave that they believed would have been where the nativity took place, and he built a church on the site of the nativity. It's called the Church of the Nativity, and it is believed to be the longest standing church in what is known as the Holy Land. Now go to that next slide for us. This is the Church of the Nativity, And in the center of the Church of the Nativity, there is the place that is believed to be the grotto, the cave, the stable in which Jesus was born. The Church of the Nativity was destroyed in 546 AD under what was known as the Samaritan Revolts, and then it was rebuilt by Justinian I. And so that's a modern-day picture of the Church of the Nativity. Saint Jerome built a monastery in Bethlehem, and he took the Jewish scriptures and translated them with the assistance of Jewish rabbis. He took the Jewish scriptures and translated them into Latin. And he took the Greek version of the New Testament and translated it into Latin, put those two versions together into what is known as the Latin Vulgate. And the Latin Vulgate is the scriptures that is used by the Roman Catholic Church still today. All of this is in Bethlehem. It's in the town where Matthew tells us Jesus was born. Bethlehem is not simply just a little town in a legendary Christmas song. Bethlehem is a real place with real significance historically and religiously. And so then Matthew continues his account of Jesus' life and says, "About that time, some wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, 'Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him.'" Traditionally, we sing, how many? Three what? We sing, "We Three Kings." There is actually no historical or biblical evidence that they were actually kings or that there were actually three of them. What we do know is that the word for wise men in the Greek language is a word that comes from a Persian word for someone who studies religion, philosophy, science, astronomy, astrology, which there's a difference between astrology and astronomy. One is the study of the stars. One looks to the stars for the answers to life questions. What we do know is that these wise men were magi. That's the word, magi. They were wise men from an eastern land who came. They saw a star, and this star that they saw gave them a representation that something was different, something was unique, something special was happening. And whatever they saw in that star and whatever they believed about that star compelled them to travel from the eastern lands to Bethlehem to find what they would call this newborn king of the Jews. They were a special class of Persian priests who were well-schooled, well-educated, very thoughtful, calculated men. They didn't do things on a whim. So when they took the steps to take this trip, it was of huge significance for them in what they were doing. And whatever it was they saw in the star led them to believe that this was a newborn king of the Jews. They would have understood a lot about the Jewish scriptures. They would have known that Israel had a history of kings, and they knew that the Jewish people would have been awaiting a newborn king, and they believed this to be the newborn king, and they say that they have come to worship him. It says King Herod. King Herod was the king of the Judean. He was basically the governor. They called him the king, and they called him the king of the Jews because he was appointed by the Roman governor. Are you bringing that for me? Thank you very much. It's very kind of you. I appreciate that. So just so everyone knows, I've had acute bronchitis since Labor Day weekend. I've had 3 rounds of antibiotics, 2 rounds of steroids, and still is what it is. So, there you have it. So, where was I? King Herod. King Herod was appointed by the Roman government. He was likely Jewish and appointed by the Roman government. Because he was appointed by the Roman government, he would have been viewed by the Jewish people as an illegitimate king. And so they would have been holding out hope and waiting for the legitimate king that would have come in the line of David, Israel's greatest king that they had been promised. Waiting for that king, they would have continued to hold out hope that Herod, who was a brutal and ruthless ruler, by the way, he was a very skilled politician, and he was a very skilled administrator. He had the temple rebuilt. He accomplished a lot of significant construction and building projects, and he ruled significantly. However, he was also known as a madman who killed many people and rabbis. Herod was paranoid, believing that there was always an imminent threat to his reign and his rule. His reign. That word should be throne, not reign. His throne and his rule. And so he even had his wife and sons put to death because he thought they posed a threat to his throne and his rule. He was brutal and ruthless. At the time that the events of the first Christmas happened, Herod is likely very old, and he's likely very sick. He is likely coming to grips with the reality that his reign is coming to an end, and not just his reign, but likely his life is coming to an end. And he is likely holding on to any semblance of power and control and maybe even hope that he can to hold on as long as he can. So when he receives news from the wise men that they've come to see and worship this newborn king of the Jews, it would have come as very disturbing and very troubling news to him. It says, so they responded, "In Bethlehem in Judea," they said, "for this is what the prophet wrote." And he's referring to something the Old Testament prophet Micah wrote about a king that would come. He said, "And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not least among the ruling cities of Judah, for a ruler will come from you who will be the shepherd for my people Israel." The prophet Micah wrote about this ruler that would come, and specifically this ruler would be born in Bethlehem. And they had studied this, and they were aware that Bethlehem would be the birthplace of this newborn king of the Jews. And so when they show up, they are anticipating the newborn king of the Jews. And it says that the Jewish history, the Jewish scriptures tell us that Samuel went to anoint David as king. And David became Israel's greatest king. And the prophets foretold that a new king would come in the line of David. Herod was not in the line of David. And so they were waiting for this baby who would be born to become the newborn king of the Jews. The first mention of the town Bethlehem in the Jewish scriptures is in relationship to a lady by the name of Rachel, who was the Jewish patriarch Jacob's wife. And on their travel back to the homeland, Rachel died, and she was buried in a place that is now known as Rachel's tomb. And it is supposedly, if they believe they found the exact site, it is at the north entrance of the town of Bethlehem. And so that's the first mention of the town of Bethlehem. It says, "Then Herod called for a private meeting with the wise men, and he learned from them the time when the star first appeared." Though in the song, "O Little Town of Bethlehem," the silent stars go by. The star that the wise men followed spoke volumes. It told them enough to know the place. It told them enough to know the time. And it told them enough to expose the time of the birth of the baby to Herod, who was greatly disturbed. Then Herod, told them, "Go to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child. And when you find him, come back and tell me so that I can go and worship him too." There's, for me in this, a lot of irony that takes place. Here you have the current king of the Jews and a proclaimed newborn king of the Jews. And the current king of the Jews is paranoid and perceiving that the newborn king of the newborn king of the Jews is a threat to his reign. And so The current king of the Jews sends wise men from the east. He doesn't send his army. He doesn't send his people. He sends these wise men to a town far away, Bethlehem, not far away. Sends them to a town away from Jerusalem where he was to go and search for this king so that they could come back and tell him where the king is so that he could go and worship him too. Now, we know that because Herod was greatly disturbed and some of the things that follow, Herod had no intention of ever going and worshiping the newborn king of the Jews. Herod had every intention to put an end to the threat to his throne and his rule. He had every intention to eliminate this child that had been born. So after this interview, the wise men went their way, and the star they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. So they followed the star to this place in Bethlehem, this stable, outside of an inn because there was no room for them to stay in the inn. And they followed the star all the way there, and it guided them. There's a part of me that wonders, why did the star originally take them to Jerusalem? What was the purpose in them going to Jerusalem? Why didn't the star just take them to Bethlehem? I mean, after all, what they were looking for was the baby. They had no need to see Herod. They had no need to interact with Herod. And in some ways, Herod had no need to know. In some ways, it seems it would have been better off had Herod not known. And it seems that the story would have made much more sense and been a whole lot smoother and cleaner if the star had just taken them to Bethlehem. They seen the baby, they found the baby, they worshiped the baby, and then they went on their way. And so I wonder, why did the story have to include Jerusalem? Why did the story have to include Herod? Why did the story have to include the complicated and the messy and the inconvenient and the unfortunate? Well, your guess is as good as mine. Because I would never presume to understand some of the things that God does the way God chooses to do them. I think, and again, this is just me thinking, so understand that. I think it included the complicated and the unfortunate and the challenging and all of those things because that's what life presents to us. And I think that it includes Herod and all of the things surrounding Herod because life throws that at us. And even in the story of the first Christmas, what it shows is that in the complicated and in the challenging and in the unfortunate and in the difficult and in the tension and in the stress and in all of the things that go on, that even in the face of Herod, who was known as Herod the Great, by the way, that even in the face of Herod, God's story still prevails. If you notice, the fact that the wise men went to Jerusalem instead of Bethlehem first doesn't mean the baby wasn't born. It doesn't mean that anything changed. It doesn't mean that anything was different other than the complicated part of the story. And I think the point of including Herod and Jerusalem and all of that, and again, this oversimplifies it in my own head, but I think the reason is because it shows us that in the midst of all of it, God is still God. And God still reigns supreme. And God's plan still prevails, no matter the circumstances. Bethlehem is actually the hills and all of that provide very fertile soil. It's believed that the produce and the livestock and things like that that were raised in and around Bethlehem were actually put into service in Jerusalem in the temple for sacrifices and things like that. We don't know that for sure, but it seems pretty safe speculation around some things. But what we do know is that the name Bethlehem literally means house of bread. And when Jesus was born, and one of the names for Jesus is that he is the bread of life. And so in a little town that's known as the house of bread, you have the baby who would be known as the bread of life being born. And we sometimes, we sing, O little town of Bethlehem, as if Bethlehem is just an O little town. But Bethlehem is so much more significant than that. It says, when they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasure chest, and they gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Just so you know, right there is where we typically believe it's three kings, because there were three gifts. But who knows? The cool thing is that they come and they present gifts to Jesus. They present gifts to the baby who is actually the greatest gift ever given. And I wonder if as they gave their gifts to Jesus, if their hearts and minds were opened to receiving him as the greatest gift ever given. We know that they gave gifts. We know that they bowed down and worshiped. And we know that they believed him to be the newborn king of the Jews. But I wonder if their hearts opened up to the gift that he truly was and truly is. There's a line in the song, O Little Town of Bethlehem. It says, how silently the wondrous gift is given. So God imparts to human hearts the blessing of his heaven. No ear may hear his coming, but in this world of sin, where meek souls will receive him, the dear Christ enters in. Bethlehem is not just a little town and a legendary Christmas song. Bethlehem is a real place. Today, Bethlehem is a thriving has thriving marketplaces and cities. It is densely populated with about 30,000 people that live in Bethlehem now. It is a significant place in the region of the Middle East today. But it is also a significant place historically. It's a significant place spiritually, because it is in that town, little town of Bethlehem, where this baby Jesus was born. And I think that last line of the song is our takeaway for everything today. Where meek souls will receive him, the dear Christ enters in. And so just as I wonder about the wise men, whether they received him as the gift that he was, I wonder for people like you and people like me, as we march into all that is this Christmas season, are our souls meek? And do we really receive Christ as the gift that he is and allow him to enter in as he truly deserves to enter in? Let me pray for us this morning. Dear God, thank you for today. Thank you for this time together. And thank you for a man by the name of Philip Brooks, who in the 1860s had no idea that this little poem he wrote for children would stand the test of time to become a legendary Christmas song. But this morning, as we close out singing O Little Town of Bethlehem, may the words of this poem and the melody of this song sink deeply into our hearts. May our souls be meek, and may we truly allow Christ to enter in. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.